Alan Coleman, people will be talking about how you led 18-0, but that doesn't tell the story of the game really, does it?
No, I thought we were really good, I really do. And especially that first 20 minutes where we've got the players we want on the field, and then bang, just out of nowhere, three within space of a minute. And I think we just scored and Gilly come over and went, I kept my grinds going. And so he comes off and within 5 minutes this going. And this is not a knock at the lads who went in there, but they're just not them players, they're not arse. And it really, really affected us. You could see confidence go a little bit from us, how we were playing and our structure. But really proud of your efforts. I thought, even when we're losing, there was a point where we were 24-18, and Bad Drop drops it clean through. And he just said to me then, I said, it is what it is, mate, we can't change them. Nick Gregson drops ball over the line. So we had opportunities to go back in front, and it just shows how much fight they had in them, because they're a good side, York. But yeah, gutted. Just gutted with how it unfolded, because I really thought, you know, people would see, you know, what we're about and what we're getting there, because they're good. I've got a good group, James, and it's just not quite worked for us at the minute.
Yeah, because I have to say, you look at the teams before the match and you're looking at York's park and you're looking at your park on paper and you're thinking they've got a hell of a lot of size. I mean, some of their outside backs are probably bigger than some of your forwards, and you were thinking, how on earth are you going to be able to do this? But then to get 18-0 up in the first 20 minutes playing some nice rugby must have pleased you.
Yeah, brilliant. Liam Benson did 80 minutes today. God help what his stats are, because he'll be top tackle count and top metre carries, and He's somebody we can't do without. He's massive for us. And if you notice, now he's starting again. We've improved as a group. And I know people say, well, you need big lads, but he does hell of a lot of work, what goes unnoticed. Gregson's playing really confident now with his shape, with Gilmore linking that, you know, from that first phase to that second phase, what we want to attack. And Dizzy's a big body and he carries. And then I think it's been really working for us with likes of Gav and Adam Lawton, if he was available, and people like that, making an impact and falls. And you know, unfortunately today we couldn't do it because we had to change them all at the same time.
Yeah, so you basically kicked to go 18-0. Well, it was before he kicked the goal technically, but you'd gone 18-0 up and JJ and Tom Gilmore come off. Jack Owens had already gone off with his foot or his ankle, whatever it was that he'd done. And you're down to 14 players. You lost Lewis Hall in the second half. I think you still had two spare interchanges at the end, I think, that you hadn't had a chance to use because you didn't have the bodies to use them.
No, I got it. Dougie's just come back, as you know, for two, and he's been brilliant for us. And he's lifted dressing room because he's a confidence player and people like him on field because he whacks people. I think today he did a couple where he knocked him off the feet, and then it's boom, bam again, and he's had some real bad luck. We're doing it tough, but we'll take a lot from this game. We'll take a lot from it because we know what we can do and what we can achieve. But we desperately need to get some bodies in, that's for sure.
At 18-0 up and, you know, you're losing bodies, were you a bit disappointed with any of the tries? What did you make of the one where Hingano was sort of slipped on the floor and got the offload away and then they kicked to the other side and scored? I think that was the second one.
Yeah, well, you know, we spoke about having more energy than them and beating them in possession, and we did that. But then little incidents like that, we've not got more energy than him because he's got a chance to get back up, and he shouldn't be. If somebody goes on ground, we should be on that and nullify it. And we've struggled from kicks the last few weeks because, you know, you just said then, I think Ben Jones is 6'3", whatever he is, and big body, Galliano, and they're good in her. So, you know, we can't let them get to that opportunity, and I think we let ourselves down at times doing that. But we spoke all week about if they score, it's got to be a corner, nowhere else. They don't come through us, they've got to go around us. And I said at half-time, listen, you've done your job for me there. I'm not happy with the tries, but at least they're not coming through us. And I don't think they come through us all afternoon, to be honest, James. I thought we defended really well with some aggression in middle, and everything was on an edge for them.
At 18-16 at half-time, what was your message? Was it a case of just trying to organise the players you had left to play the right roles?
Well, we spoke and we just said we're going to take it in 4-10 minutes. So this first 10 is vital. It's massive. You know, let's just, because we against Halifax last week, it affected us that 10 minutes and we didn't come out. So I thought we started all right. And then after 10, you're thinking, right, okay, let's have a go here. And then they get in front. So that next 10's like, let's just complete for this 10. Let's get to half of the half, basically, and see where we're at with that. And then, like I said, all goes, and then it just disrupts everything, basically. And it's basically, you're hanging on for dear life. But I thought we showed a lot of character, because when we did have some shape and link, like I said, Andy's clean through, Nick's through, and it, you know, so we never stop trying, and I can't knock them for that. They give me everything today, I know that.
I think Andy Badmack had a try-saving tackle to make up for it on Galliano as well. How did you feel like he went on his first run?
Great. I think it was perfect when Gilly was on, but then when you lose Tom, you lose Andy, really, because he needs somebody putting him there, probing him, moving him about. He's very, very athletic, very quick, very strong. You know, and he's just probably, for 60 minutes, didn't get enough ball.
So we might as well ask you then about the injury situation. What's the early verdict looking like on those that went off?
Not great. Looking like Hall's definitely no chance. Fingers crossed it's not as bad as we think, but I think it's the same injury he's had an operation on, which isn't great. Jordan Johnson failed his head test. Jack Owens will need a scan and certainly be out for a bit, and Gillen will need a scan on his groin also. So we'll not see them guy. Well, JJ, probably just a week with the assessment, but the other three, no, we're not going to see him for a bit then.
You've got, obviously, Rodri Lloyd was your only other fit player that didn't play. He was the 18th man today. Outside of him, is there anybody close to coming back? You know, Depp Patton, players like that?
Hopefully. Well, I've just said to Deck, anyway, I'm going to play for you. And I said, no, you need to be right, because we can't afford you coming and we'll lose you again. So I said, it's vital we make that call and make sure you're right. But my mobile's got to be busy tonight, begging and borrowing. It's where we're at. It's where we're at. It's so easy to say, let's all feel sorry for ourselves, but we won't. We're playing best team in comp next week. Short turnaround, so mentally we've got to be ready, and we will. And we look forward to playing Toulouse. We like playing them. But we certainly need to bring some bodies in, and hopefully some of our good friends out there will support us on that.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at the team before you had these injuries and thinking you need a couple of forwards probably to help the size of the pack. What is it that's preventing it? Is it a funding situation? Is it? What is it?
It's just... basically who's available. We've done a bit of wheeling dealing in the last few weeks and got promised some things, and they've let us down massively. We've let players go because we've been told we're getting something, and then we've been stung, really, and that's the truth. It's difficult because people are not being offered contracts in certain clubs, or we're trying to say, listen, we'll like you for next year, come now. And so we're probably going to have to push on that. But no, the club said, if you see something, go and grab it. But at the minute, I'm not just bringing somebody in just for bringing it in. I know we might have to for the next few weeks. But, I mean, I won't try to make it so we're getting right players for us as a club. And some, unfortunately, they're not available at the minute. So I think we'll learn one lesson. We need to have a bigger squad. Everyone in our competition's got over 25, 26 players. And I think we've 13 now. 13 of our own fit. So we desperately need something.
Is Adam Lawton, I think he's still here for another couple of weeks. Would he was okay for next week?
Hopefully. He probably said it, but he weren't 100%, and it's not fair on players to do that. Rod needed a rest massively. That's why I thought Max and Andy were great there, by the way. And then we've moved Max again, and he's been disrupted. I feel for the kid, because I see him as a back row, and he's gone there and done it, but he's so adaptable in it, how he can play and what he can play. So, but Rod will come back into that. So then we just need to go and get some more.
Your coach, Mark Applegarth, said on the radio just that he still thinks Widnes will make the playoffs, no doubt. But you need to get some wins from somewhere, don't you?
Yeah, I know a lot of focus was on, we're at home all June. You look at the games, don't get me wrong, we should have won last week, I feel. Probably a point drop from us. But then to losing York... they're where you're at for a reason. They're very good. They spend a lot of money. I think York's got a squad of 35, 36. Toulouse, 25, 26, but full-time. So it's a tough month, and then it gets no easier. We go to Oldham then, who's getting bodies back. And, we all know how big their squad is. So it's a tough period for us, and we probably need everyone available. Unfortunately, we've not. So we can't moan about it. We've got to dust ourselves down, and then let's get into July and... I know for a fact we can put three or four on bounce easily done. And it's about beating teams like your Doncasters and Featherstones. We have to beat them teams because they're around us. We also have to look over our shoulder. We're not foolish as well, because Sheffield are going to start picking wins up. We know that. But we'll be all right. We'll pick some wins up. And if it's enough, fingers crossed, we'd love to be in them playoffs again, because we did it last year. Nobody expected us to do it. And I don't think anyone expects us to do it at a minute. So that's an incentive for us to go and do it.
Hello and welcome to Widnes Rugby Chat, episode 19 of 2025, with myself, James Gordon, and Mike Parsons. That was Alan Coleman after the York game, and Mike, your comment was he sounded a bit down
when, well, I couldn't quite tell whether you meant him or me, to be perfectly honest, when you said that. But it was a defeat, and every defeat makes you down. It was almost a case of what might have been in quite a few different ways for Widnes that game.
100%. Listening to Alan after the game, I did. I picked up that he was down in his demeanour. He's obviously passionate and you know, very encouraging character and very enthusiastic. And the context of the game obviously contributed to probably why he sounded it in his voice, because I was a bit emotional after it, and I've took a bit of time out afterwards to get over the disappointment and correct myself, James, because moments after the game, I was a little bit, you know, well, very disappointed, like most people was. But when you start aligning it in your head and the context of the game, losing Jack Owens, Tom Gilmore, Lewis Hall, Jordan Johnson, if you take them at 18-0 out of York's team, Widnes being at 18-0 could have gone on at a canter, and instead it's backfired. And unfortunately, as results go, you know, it falls in the pattern of what we've been given recently. I've got to give the players and the coaching staff a fair bit of credit, actually, because in them opening 25, 30 minutes when we had a full 17, given what we'd seen the past couple of weeks, low on confidence, we've seen signs of it coming back at Halifax. I thought we'd be in for a difficult afternoon, James, against York. I thought we was watching, in my opinion, if I was to tip before the game, the best team in the competition coming to your ground. And we raced 18-0 ahead and we looked as good as we've been all season. If you was to watch us in that 30-35 minute spell in the first half, you could arguably say if you'd not been any of the games all season that Widnes was the best team in the competition. Everything clicked in attack. Mazing out the back, the support play. It seems we have a bit of confidence now going forward where the players, if they make a break, there's belief somebody's going to be on the shoulders to finish it off. And I think we've seen one of the tries of the season. We'll go some way to seeing one better this year in Widnes colours. But then, of course, the injuries hit, didn't they? And, you know, I think the blow was to not hold York off before half time. I think it would have prevented maybe a try or two less. You know, we may have had enough to hang on, but ultimately, when you've got a middle like Liam Bent having to play 80 minutes and, you know, Lewis Hall, Nick Gregson chipping in the halves. Joe Lyons isn't a controlling halfback. He did his best, but you're playing with no controlling halfback. It just all caught up with us. And, you know, Alan's right, in fairness. We did have a shot at the end where we could have been level, but it wasn't to be. It's hard when you're looking at, you know, the fixtures ahead, to lose an Oldham, to take a lot of positives out of a fan, because you're thinking, right, well, it doesn't get any easier. But at the same time, if you're stripping it back, it was a hell of a lot better as an isolated performance than what we've seen in a vast number of weeks. And I think that's where I stand now. I think now the dust has settled, you've got to kind of admire the team for putting in that performance. And maybe if you wasn't playing a York, and then I'd probably chuck Bradford and Toulouse in there. If he was playing another team, you probably could have fended him off and gone on to win the game.
Well, we'll never know what might have happened at 18-0. I think Widnes were very good. I thought York had up more gears in them, especially in the first half. But then at the same time, I don't feel like they ever really hit them, even in the second half. When I looked at the teams, and you're looking at the size of York's pack, you know, even their outside backs were probably bigger than some of the forwards Widnes had it. I did fear for Widnes, but I thought they played it really well in that first 25-30 minutes. And to be fair, the Halifax game, I thought Widnes played well in the Halifax game. Take away maybe 20 minutes, probably the 20 minutes where Dan Murray's not on the field, or, you know, he was probably off it for a bit longer than that. I think if you take away the moments of that Halifax game where Dan Murray wasn't on the field, I think Widnes were very good against Halifax. Liam Harris was... I just interviewed Alan Coleman and they bumped into Liam Harris and he was saying about how they were under the pump in the first half, and, you know, he acknowledged how Widnes looked in really good nick and how they'd clicked and how confident they looked. And then, of course, it unravelled with losing them three key players from the key positions in the first half. And it's not just necessarily losing them as individuals. It's the impact it has on your rotation. So, you know, all your forwards have got to then play every single minute rather than being able to be rotated. One thing I wanted to talk about, and a few people have tweeted me about this, was the second try where Hingano slips on the last tackle, then gets up, gets a pass away, the kick to the corner. I think it was Morgan McWhirter who had virtually completed the tackle and didn't. That might have been the key moment where, if Widnes had have managed to complete that tackle and it was 18, you know, when it was 18-6 and then they kept 18-6, I don't think that was the difference between them winning the game. I don't think Widnes would have won the game anyway.
No, but, and you know what, James? I was bang on with that, and it was a try. Nobody completed the tackle. There was a lot of, you know, obviously people shout, don't they, out of desperation more than anything, wanting your side to get the decision and be on the right side of it. But I was bang on line with it. He was on the floor. People were saying his ball carrying armor touched the floor, but when it touched the floor, nobody was on top of it. So it's play on.
Yeah, a few people were saying, oh, if you slip, you're grounded. But it's not something that there's nothing in the rules directly it might be a bit of an ambiguous call. But if you fell over and you were on your knees and you offloaded the ball, you'd be wanting that decision to go in your favor all day. But yeah, I mean, it's a frustrating one. The big issue, of course, as Alan Coleman alluded to, is that Widnes are now down to 13 fit players, basically. They have named the squad for Toulouse this week. It's just a 19-man squad from Widnes this week, which unsurprisingly doesn't include Jack Owens or Tom Gilmore. Jordan Johnson automatically not included because of failing his HIA last week. So the squad includes lone players Andrew Badrock, Adam Lawton, dual reg players from Warrington, Ben Hartle and Max Wood. Max Wood's also in the Warrington squad, so there's a chance he might not be available for Widnes anyway. And then Will Roberts, who's joined on a two-week loan from St. Helens. We've just had it firmed up that AJ Towes, the winger from Lee, who played a handful of games, he's been recalled. He had previously signed on a deal to the end of the season, but he's been recalled. I suppose whichever way you look at it, having a 19-man squad isn't great, but even more so when five of those players aren't even yours. And there's massive question marks over Depp Patton. I don't feel like he's anywhere near playing, because if he was anywhere close to being available to play, he would have at least been warming up or taking part with the team last week, whereas he wasn't. He was up in the bridge suite in his civvies.
Yeah, my belief, Dex, a couple of weeks off. Like you say, I know you've got to be careful with players returning, but when you're down to an 18, 19-man squad, 19 if including Max Wood, then if Depp Patton's even 90% fit, you're in a situation where you probably roll the dice. But yeah, obviously not to be. And look, the squad we've got, you know, you're going to have to cobble it together and hope against adversity you can put on a challenge and come together and come up trumps.
I think probably what you're looking at is, I mean, with Patton, you know, you've got two halfbacks anyway, haven't you, in Joe Lyons and Will Roberts. So you're probably thinking, well, it's not even worth the risk of even if he was anywhere near fit, of playing him and him then breaking down. So I think you can confidently say that Lyons and Roberts would be the halfbacks. You've got Fozard and Hartill who are going to be the hookers. You would probably expect Fozard will probably play a lot of minutes and maybe even stay on the pitch even when Hartill's on. So I think at least even though you've only got 19, you can at least put a sensible team together, if that makes sense, where you've got players in the right positions. Max Wood would obviously be having him would be a big difference, in my opinion. I think he's a very good player, certainly at Championship level. And the size of Adam Lawton will certainly help against Toulouse. You know, we probably see, well, I guess at least one of Rodri Lloyd or Max Roberts will play in the centres. So I suppose when you look at it in that regard, at least there'll be a lot more balance to the team than there was in the second half against York anyway.
Yeah, that's it. I think, look, on the night, you know, you're going to have a recognisable team. Of course you are. Where it gets complicated is games aren't won on paper, and usually when you're winning a game, it's down to your combinations, and obviously having so many lone players in at the same time. Certainly in Roberts' case, who's playing half-back, or will be playing, it's not ideal, and you know, we're overlooking Morgan McWhirter. I know he's been here for a number of weeks now, but he's still quite new as well, and he's had to play back row, he's had to play props, had to play loose forward. And I think what I've seen with McWhirter so far, he's obviously, I think he's got something about him, but I think he's quite raw and still needs to be integrated into the team properly. So you've got that. You've got, obviously, Lawton's been at the club for two games, but then he's missed a week. So you've got all these moving pieces, and I think at the same time, it's the rotation of the bench. And look, we're on thin ice in terms of picking up injuries again. I mean, could you imagine an afternoon like York again where we pick up four more injuries? And let's have it right, it's a contact sport. We can't rule that out.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the Toulouse squad. Oli Ashall-Bott isn't in their squad. So they're without him. They're also without Jake Shorrocks, Callum Gahan, their first choice hooker. So they're missing a couple of key men as well. Dom Peyrou's not in it either. Just scrolling through now to see who else they've got. They have got Thomas Lacans, who's a good halfback at the level. So they're missing a couple as well. The game is going to be live streamed, although I've noticed that, and I don't love to say this, to be honest, mate, I presume it'll be geo-blocked to France. You can watch it on Toulouse's YouTube channel, but witness our streaming the game. £10 again. I believe they're going to do at least five matches between now and the end of the season. Of course, this is the second one. It'd be interesting to hear people's feedback from those that see it. We think just over 100 streams were purchased for the York game. And to be fair, Ed, I think there wasn't a massive amount of publicity. I think the club could do better promoting it. I said the same to Stuart Murphy this week. And to be fair, because it was the first one up, I think they probably just wanted to make sure everything was working as it should. And it appeared that everything worked as it should, apart from the scoreboard. I'd be asking for some money back from the production people for having the rugby union scoring system on for the first. I think it was the first half that they were given 5 points for a try. It's a shame actually that they couldn't have the rugby union scoring in the first half, and then when York scored all their points, they got the rugby league scoring, because we just might have edged it. But good for the overseas fans or people out of town who can't get to game to be able to watch the games. I'm still very sceptical over the feasibility of streaming. I do know actually that Barrow have got an interesting deal with their supplier where they get a cut. The supplier does it for free, but takes the revenue that they make and then has to give a percentage back to Barrow at the end of it, which is, I don't know how long their business model will last, but hey,
Look, James, I mean, you are bang right in what you're saying, but I believe, you know, a certain amount of these streaming games obviously add up to IMG points. So that's obviously why all the championship clubs are ultimately probably doing. That's the number one reason. You know, if you took the IMG away, would clubs and ourselves be talking about it differently? And the answer is probably yes. So it's just where we are at the moment as a sport. You know, you've got to tick boxes and you've got to make grades. And ultimately, if you're putting that on and you've got to try and make your money back, even if you lose a bit of money by a couple of quid, but gain an IMG point, is it cheaper gaining that IMG point than another pillar that you can't afford, like a big screen? And that's probably, if we're being honest, the reason why clubs are obviously looking into doing it.
Yeah, certainly the IMG points, whether the IMG points will still be a thing is anybody's guess. You're the man in the know this week, Mike, so we've got plenty of questions to answer, so I'll let you set the ball rolling.
Yeah, and first of all as well, thanks to everybody who's obviously written in a question. There was a hell of a lot, so I've done my best to note questions down. I've got to be honest, the last, say, 6-7 hours, I haven't looked at the forum, so if there's any questions that have come on since, we'll try and include them next week. So I'm going to start north to south, and we'll start with not so much an unfamiliar question at all, but we'll go for it. Who do Widnes duel Reg with next season? Can we get season-long loans with no callback clauses? So I'll answer the first one dead quickly, James. No callback clauses, no Super League club, the way the sport is going to include that in a loan, or very few, very few. That's just the way the sport is. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, you because it's not a loan really. Then you know,
look at Luke Thomas. he played at Warrington last week. You know, and they're not going to remove their right to calling him back because Super League clubs are struggling for players.
Yeah, it's, you know, a lot of these players aren't even on. You know, players are only on 2-year deals anyway. So if you're loaning them out for a year, there's not a great deal of value. For the soup, because the Super League clubs has to, unless the Championship club are going to take the wage, but there's no way that a Championship club is going to take on the full time wage of a Super League player to take them on loan. Because don't forget, the players you get on loan from Super League clubs, they're still training with the Super League clubs in the day anyway. You know what I mean? They're still, by and large, even if you've got a player on loan, they're still going to be going to training at Lee or Warrington because that's their job. You know, they're not just going to down tools and just train with Widnes two nights a week. I certainly think that there's got to be serious questions asked if Widnes will remain with Warrington. I feel like they'd probably give him a second chance this year. And it's ended up in a mess, really. Mess is maybe a little bit harsh. I think the problem is your expectations as a junior club, ultimately you're just sat there waiting for the senior club to give you who they've got. I think clearly Warrington are clearly in a point where they want to dictate where players go. And Warrington want to be able to say to their junior partner, well, we've got these players this week, they've got to play. Whereas my impression is that if Widnes have got a full squad of players, they want to prioritise their own players. And that, it would appear, and I don't know this necessarily, but reading between the lines, it would appear that Warrington have got a bit miffed over time with Widnes in that, well, when they want to send players out, they want them to play where they want them to play. You know, we saw it at the start of last season where Widnes had a run of games where they had Widnes' own team. So if Warrington can't get a player to Widnes in 6-7 weeks, then they're going to look at farming them out elsewhere. So I don't know. It's a quandary that, because I think it basically boils down to how big or how good your own squad is. I think the problem at the moment is Widnes are desperate for loan or dual reg players because they actually haven't got enough of their own players to make it work. Now, if you were able to have enough of your own players of a sufficient quality, then it would become less and less of a, you know, less and less of an issue. I don't know how realistic it is to get to a point where you say we want to partner up with a club who's going to give us a prop every week, and we don't mind whether it's prop number one or prop number two. I don't know how realistic that is. But as I say, I think you don't have to have a partner either. Do you know what I mean? I mean, if you look, Widnes have got players on loan from, what, four different clubs now? So is there any value in having one partner? Is it just a case of get a you can from whoever? You know, Warrington have dual-regged with Halifax, Keighley and whoever else. Do you know what I mean? So it might be a case of maybe they just step back and say, well, we don't want to have one highlight partner, but as a club, we want to be open to taking players. Lee would make the most sense just because of, obviously, Alan Coleman's connections.
Yeah, look, it'd be interesting to know how far away Widnes are from being independent without having to solely rely on dual reg as much as what we do. And obviously, that'd be a question for somebody like Stuart Murphy. But my stance on it is, in terms of adding to what you've said and just my sole opinion on it, I wouldn't link with Lee because we know that Alan's got a good connection with Derek Beaumont. So I think, you know, like we did last year with Keenan Brand, Andy Badrock this year, AJ Towles. I think you're more prone to getting a player off Lee anyway with them connections. Warrington, look, I've said many times, said every week, can it? It's never worked. No consistency. We've tried it before Alan Coleman's come in. We tried it last year. Arguably what you've just said, James, this year we tried to give it a second chance almost. That hasn't materialised. I think to back when we was last in Super League and loan players who have worked for us, and you think Logan Tompkins, Joel Tompkins, Liam Farrell, Brad O'Neill, there's always a Zach Eckersley, Tom Forbert, there's always a quality player coming through Wigan, and they have a constant conveyor belt of talent. A lot of, you know, some players in the ranks as well, Widnes lads. If it was me, I'd be going all out to try and sell ourselves to get Wigan on board. And the other team is obviously St. Helens. Now, there was rumours earlier on in the season that, you know, it was a potential that Saints didn't want to dual reg partner with us because of the playing pitch and stuff like that. And you can look into that, and that maybe coincides with us not really getting many players from St. Helens, but we've all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we've got Roberts this week, so maybe there's something in the water there where we could be steering our way towards St. Helens. Who knows? But for me, I'd be doing everything I can. If we're going to go dual reg, I'd be doing everything I could to either link with Wigan or, obviously, St. Helens.
Well, maybe the thing with St. Helens is they know that halfbacks are a protected species, so they're not worried about Roberts getting tackled on the eye pitch. I mean, what's interesting is we mentioned before Max Wood is in the squad this week. Max Wood has made the most appearances out of any of Widnes's loan players this season, which is quite extraordinary, really, because he's only played three, and they were all at the very start of the season. He has been in and out of the Warrington team since then. But I think that's also the issue, is that, you know, you're looking at AJ Towles has also played three, by the way, before anyone shoots me down on that. But just looking through this list now, you've had AJ Towles, Max Wood, Josh Hodgson, Adam Lawton, Noah Hodkinson, Alfie Johnson, Ollie Leyland, Kai Taylor-Ray, Ben Hartill, Ewan Smith, Andrew Badrock, Luke Thomas, James Duffy. You've had 13 players on dual reg or loan over the season, and nine of them players, I think eight of them players, have played one game. And the most that you've had, so effectively the longest you've had, I mean, I know they've not necessarily been all together, well, I suppose AJ Towles and Max would have, they've basically had 3 weeks. 3 weeks is the longest you've had. Hodgson played two games, Hodkinson played two games. They played for 2 weeks each. Obviously, the Warrington lad you've had once and then never seen him again. Luke Thomas played twice, but of course, there was 6 weeks or whatever between them. So it's just like, it's whichever way you look at it, it's not working out. And I think you've got to raise serious questions about the way forward. Of course, whether the argument is that, I mean, I think the problem is that you always want better players, don't you? And I think ultimately, if you run with a big squad, you're only going to be able to afford or attract lesser quality players. You know, and we probably saw that maybe at the start of the season. And I did say to you before we came on air, I didn't want to start going on about this because I'm sick of talking about it. But, you know, the three or four players at the start of the year who were in the squad, it was determined weren't quite up to the standard that Widnes required. But it might just be actually in the future, you might just have to suck it up and be like, well, rather than pulling in a centre or a winger from a Super League club for 2 weeks, maybe we are just going to have to stick in this lad that we've got who we don't think is good enough, but we're just going to have to put him in. And by the way, I think we've played players who aren't good enough for quite a few years. It won't be the first time that's happened. But yeah, we'll see what happens.
So the next one is, what are your thoughts linking up with the bowler for pre-match entertainment? Now, I do have a little bit of insight for this, speaking to the club. Now, for the Toulouse game, there's going to be a little bit of a fan zone at the bowler on the bowling green. So the bowler obviously opens at 12 o'clock, and at 4:15, there's going to be some live music. So I think that is going to be the beginning of a potential mini partnership between the two, and the club and the bowler, obviously, I suppose, using it as a trial basis where they're going to be looking in future weeks to obviously add more to the event and see who turns up, maybe putting some potential food stalls on, X, Y, and Z, if it takes off. But of course, you know, before spending anything, either party, club or the bowler, you've got to get people in there and trial it. So they're starting off with a singer, and that's on at 4:15, and it's a Saturday, so it's a good time to trial it. So that's kind of a bit of insight over that one.
Yeah, you're probably a much better judge of that. I'm very unsociable and miserable, Mike, to be honest. So I did notice actually when I drove in a different way on, and I noticed they've leggies painted over the wall that had all like the Widnes Vikings logos and the Viking heads on. I'd noticed that they'd painted over that wall. I didn't know whether that was of any significance.
I usually come as a social aspect from the other direction of the New Albion, but now as you've mentioned it, James, next time I'm in the traffic lights, I will have a nosy up and have a look, see if you're right. How do you think we can market ourselves better? So again, look, myself and a couple of other fans have had a bit of dialogue with the club, and there'll be a little bit more information coming out about that in the next couple of weeks. But this is a topic that we've gone in depth with already. It's come through the podcast quite a lot. And you know what? I do agree with fans to a point. So,
Go on.
To begin with, a couple of things that are in place that I can tell everybody is the Albion, the Imperial, the Hub, and Leggies have all agreed to advertised with posters of the next three games, and each of the pubs on then advertising posters will have a QR code. If scanned, people can buy tickets. The QR code can be traced to whatever pub it come from to get a bit of data for the club to see if them posters are working. So that's obviously a starting point with that. We're pushing as well to get that across the Widnes town into all the pubs in the town, because let's have it right, it's a no-brainer in terms of we're a rugby club, people go to these pubs to watch alternative sport. If people are interested in alternative sport, then the chance, if they're going to be tempted, potentially there's an opening there. Also for the Bradford game, Halton Housing have put some funding towards to the club, and in return, 1,000 tickets have been given to Halton Housing to distribute to addresses around the town. So again, that's a bit of an initiative being created between obviously Halton Housing and Widnes to try and get more people to the game. So that's obviously being looked at as well. So there, I suppose, from an inside kind of two different bits of things that are going on. Look, they're two examples, and the club are well aware that more things need to be done, but they are two examples of things that have been done already.
Yeah, we've talked about loads of stuff on here. My one was have next game information at the ground when you go past the ground. I remember that one. I've seen people mention, I mentioned this in a podcast years ago, they should have home of Widnes Vikings World Cup Champions 1989 on the Welcome to Widnes Road signs. Whether you crowdfund that or whatever, I think that's something. The club needs to send out more emails. So the club must have a database of thousands of people. I never get an email often. That is such a simple way of contacting fans every single week. And I think that's a massively under, everyone who buys a ticket, they get their email address. And I think that's something that the club should be sending out something weekly, at least.
Look, you bang on, and, my stance on it and the other two supporters that was involved with the same conversation, our standpoint is quite clear in terms of, it's all well and good speaking about these ideas, but we do need to see action. Them two examples are ideas that have obviously, kind of been put in place by the club, but the message is also, and the club acknowledged it and understand we need to be doing more in these aspects, because, people might say, well, you could do that and it doesn't make a difference, but you've got to try. And even if it brings 10, 12, 15 people to the game, it's an improvement. And we've spoke on this podcast a lot that it's a massive part of the club where I think, it's been our downfall and people have been disengaged with it. So hopefully it's a work in progress and we'll see a big difference, and the club are on board with the idea of trying to access as many of these different ideas as possible. Next one was... This is an interesting one. I'll let you go first with this, James. Why do we let teams make 10 metres instead of moving up? Now, obviously, you commentating, James, you might have an expert opinion on this rather than me. Neither of us are coaches. I think you're more qualified to talk to this than me.
I just think that's one of them things that people have a perception over, that it's just because they're focusing so much on their team that they don't notice that everyone probably does it. I think there's probably an element of Widnes. Widnes defend in a very containing manner, I would say. Widnes aren't like or certainly don't feel like under Alan Cumming. They don't really have anyone who's shooting out the line trying to hit someone. They're very much like, we're happy to contain a team and let them come 50 metres up the field because they feel like they're not going to get broken down. And to be fair, you saw that. And Alan Coleman actually alluded to it a little bit in his post-match, in that they basically said, we don't want York scoring down the middle. If we're going to concede tries, you want them to be out wide. And I think virtually all the tries Widnes have conceded in the last couple of weeks have been on the wings. So I don't think it's a... you know, I don't, that's not something that I never watch a game and think, oh, Widnes aren't moving up here. Some teams have higher defensive line speeds, but that's sometimes to do with the way that they're being, they might be the players, they might have some players who they can't trust not to miss a tackle, so they like to get them up in teams' faces. I think there's just different ways of playing, isn't there, I think?
There is, and the other thing I'd add to that as well is we don't have a forward pack. Well, we certainly don't now with Martin Riley and Liam Kirk being let to go. We don't have a forward pack that dominates. We don't dominate many teams in the forwards. We haven't done all year, even in games that we've won. You know, some of them games, you know, the opposition's forward pack's been a bit more dominant, and, you know, we've just executed at times and been a bit dogged and hung in there and come away with the win.
It's an energy thing as well because if you've got players making a lot of tackles and playing a lot of minutes, if they're rushing up on defense every time and then still having to make the same tackles and play the same minutes, they're going to have absolutely no energy for when you've actually got the ball to go forward. And I know the outside backs do a lot of the first few carries these days, but you're still reliant on a forward on tackle three or tackle four to do something that's going to scatter someone. And so if everyone's line speed's 100 mile an hour and then they're tackling and they're playing ridiculous minutes, you know, I think, like you say, that's the difference. It's just the plays you've got. Actually, I must remind Alan Coleman, he did say to me he was going to try and publicise Liam Bent's stats from the weekend because he was expecting them to be off the charts. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah, no, I agree with what you're saying there. But going back to my original point is, you know, you don't dominate many games, certainly not now with the depth of forwards we've got to choose from. And with that, you know, if a forward pack's dominating you, you lose collision. And when you lose collision, there's a quick play of the ball. And when there's a quick play of the ball, your defensive line isn't set. And then you just get stuck in that cycle and that washing machine. So I think that's where it comes from. A lot that goes back to recruitment. And one of my biggest criticisms of the club for this calendar year is the depth and the quality of player and recruitment drive has not been up to where it should have been. And you can look at it at whatever angles as you want. But the reality is when X amount of players have left, some of them through your choice, then you've got to ask yourself why and you know, and look into the recruitment side of things, and then obviously question decisions of going back to Martin Riley and Liam Kirk. Now, whether there's someone coming in the next couple of weeks and it's took a little bit longer than what first anticipated, well, fair enough, but you keep hold of them players until that person is ready to walk through the door. So I think all of that kind of is a cocktail in one, really, and ultimately,
there's probably two names that have been mentioned in relation to the Riley and Kirk thing. One is, of course, Luke Thomas, who was basically announced on a dual register at the end of the season. It sounds like Warrington had promised it. He actually played for Warrington last week. You can't really blame them for that. And then there was murmurs about Owen Farnworth, who's apparently coming next season, but there was the potential for him to come a bit earlier. But of course, Oldham have been hit with this same Musgrove ban, which then makes them reluctant to get players out. Pat Moran's gone to Featherstone, but that's another story. But yeah, it does go back to the fact that, yeah, it's all right moving two players out because you think you're going to have two players, but you've put yourself in a vulnerable situation. You've got burnt a little bit. I feel like that's sort of what's happened.
Yeah, and as a result, we're incredibly light in the pack. And, you know, when you're light in the pack, like I say, you're going to lose collisions and teams are going to target that, aren't they? So I think that's where it comes to. Finish on that point, there's a lot of talk about saying, is it a tactic and stuff? I definitely think if you ask the players or Alan Coleman, they're not standing flat on the referee and waiting for people to come towards them. as a tactic. It's definitely not the case.
I was just going to say off the back of that, what did you make of Mark Applegarth, the York coach, saying Widnes will definitely make the top six?
Well, I don't think that's definitely going to happen. You're trying to wind me up there, Jake.
I'm just saying, what did you think of what he said?
I think he was being very kind. I think he had respect over the situation. I think he had respect over the game. I think Widnes caught York by surprise. And in that first 20, 25 minutes, I've already said, we looked like the best team in the Championship. It certainly didn't look like York. And you can't take that from Alan Coleman or Widnes. It was there to see. You know, I was in disbelief. It was on my feet. We saw probably try of the season and it was all going great. And I think he probably recognised they got away with one. And ultimately, you know, was very complimentary. But I'd say our chances are touch and go. That's what
touch and go at best.
Yeah. Why do we keep buying from the same relegated teams? I'm presuming this means Swinton. Why can't we attract better players with our attendances in comparison to other teams with similar attendances and less? Plus, we have Widnes Phipps. I'll let you go first.
The reality is that all the top teams in Championship have got money men sinking money, and you know York have got Australian fellow who puts a lot of money in there. Featherstone have got a guy putting money in. Bradford have got a guy. Have got people putting money in. Toulouse obviously very underpinned by a few individuals and, you know, a healthy business club type thing. So the clubs, even all the clubs that have got, who get similar crowds to Widnes, they've all got money men putting money in on top of that. And that Oldham, another one. You know, I think it's fair. I think you'd be fair to question why can't Widnes compete better with the likes of Barrow, Halifax, Doncaster to a point. You know, I think they're valid questions if you're saying, well, how can say a Barrow attract more better players than Widnes, if your perception is. I mean, I'm not massive on that signing players from relegated clubs thing, because I still think that, you know, if a team gets relegated, you know, a player's still a good player. Do you know what I mean? I think, don't get me wrong, you don't want to be signing too many. But, you know, Tyler Dupree was in the Oldham squad that got relegated. Does that mean that he's rubbish? No, you know. I think that's just the thing. Clearly, we've got a lot of ex-Swinton players. But the coach was from Swinton, and I think in part-time sport, you are going to end up with players that coaches are familiar with, who they've worked with before, because that's their way of, they know them players. Don't forget, they only get two nights a week with them. You know, if Alan Coleman signs a player out of the blue, he gets to spend 2-3 hours a week trying to learn about him or shape him into how he wants to play. And so you've got to have players in your squad that you know and you can trust. And, you know, I have no doubt that the likes of Mike Butt and Rodri Lloyd are that's the exact reason that they're there. You know, we've seen, you know, Morgan McWhirter, he's one that's come in. And you can see from, you mentioned it already, you can see that there's parts of his game that need work or don't fit in with how Alan Coleman wants to play. But he only gets to spend 2 or 3 hours on the training ground with him every week. So it's going to take time to get them players up to speed. And of course, the nature of the game at the moment, you don't have time because, you know, contracts are so short and seasons go so quickly. I'm not massive on it being, oh, we're only signing players from relegated teams. Who got relegated last season? Dewsbury and Whitehaven, was it? And so we signed Jake Mason from Whitehaven. You know, yeah.
Look, I think this question's reverting to the, I could be wrong, but the Swinson contingents, and obviously when Chris Hamilton was here, Oldham as well, I think they're the two clubs that this is kind of getting aimed at. Everything that you said with finances, if you're comparing it to York, who get lesser crowds than us, they have a wealthy benefactor. The list's endless with that. So that's the answer with them teams. I think you mentioned like Barrow and Halifax. Look, I think at the end of the season, questions need to be asked. If they finish above us, I'm sure in-house, Alan and his coaching team will be looking at it and going, what can we do better to finish above them teams? Because there's no reason why they should be there. And there'll be, you know, there'll be a breakdown equally at the same time. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but, you know, in 10 games' time, you know, that could have reversed itself. Barrow and Halifax could have had injury crises and we've kicked on. Who knows? So I think that'd be a part of that. But going back to the Swinton thing, my opinion is, I think, very similar to when we were speaking about Widnes players playing for Widnes. I think if they're good enough, yes. I think, in my opinion, we maybe took one too many from Swinton over the years. But also, I think the club are also, look, we're in this period now where we've been on a bad run of form, but you've got to look at what's in front of you. And we've signed Jake Mason. We tried to sign Cameron Brown. Okay, it didn't work. We've signed Morgan McWhirter. I think that's a sign where in-house, the club are recognising it a little bit, and they realise that to gain an advantage and to mix it up with other teams, we have got to shop elsewhere rather than just the players that are local. So looking off the basis of that, you know, 12 months' time, you know, we could have four or five different Australians coming in, and that transforms our team. It's potential.
I think it's a bit harsh on the Swinton lads, to be honest. I mean, I get people are a little bit, oh, well, but would I get rid of Max Roberts? No. Would I get rid of Rodri Lloyd? No. Would I get rid of Mike Butt? No. You know, I think...
It's a fair point. You're right.
You know, I think Nick Gregson's probably one that splits opinion a little bit. But again, he's a prime example of a signing that Alan Coleman clearly wants to play a certain way. So he's someone that he knows can play that way that he wants to play. Being able to find an alternative to Nick Gregson might have been too difficult. Gavin Benyu came in last season as the, what, fourth choice prop. I think ultimately, if you think Widnes can attract a top line player to be the fourth choice prop, I think you've got to have a bit of a reality check.
It comes down to finances, doesn't it? And unfortunately, it's not good to say, and it's difficult, especially when you've got the heritage and history of Widnes, and a lot of our fan base, well, you know, some of our fan base have obviously lived through them times, and it was amazing, but we are a far cry from it, and, you know, there's no two ways about it. We're probably in the bottom half of spenditure in the championship, and when you are in the... you know, the bottom end of the championship in terms of expenditure, you know, you are on an uphill task to finish in the top six. I'm not saying we shouldn't, by the way, but...
No, you know. I mean, Widnes should be a top six championship club, but at the end of the day, you know, Widnes were good more than 35 years ago. That's the reality of the situation. It's 35 years ago. And realistically... like I say, I see people harking back to them times. That's fine. It's great that people experience that. But the world's completely different. The world of rugby league is completely different. You know, probably back in them, you know, Widnes itself's completely different. And I think, I don't think it's all about money. I don't feel like it's as simple as you need, the only way you can win is by having a benefactor. I don't think that that's the case at all. But clearly it makes life a hell of a lot easier.
Yeah, it does. Just a quick one to scoot over. What happened to the signing too good to turn down when we let Martin Riley go? All I would say to this is, you know, I believe things haven't been ideal, obviously. You know, we've spoke about it on here, haven't we, James? Of obviously letting players go and people not being ready to come in. But I believe the club are working hard and certain things are a work in progress. So I know people are probably sick of hearing that, but that's what I'll say and leave it at that, really.
Yeah, the big problem is that, you know, the big problem that you've had these three home games, haven't you? That in theory we're looking like big games, and at the moment you've got 1 point. But at the same time, after you play Oldham, only one of the last nine games is against one of the top four teams. So there's still time to get it right. And if you can get a run of wins together, you know, if you win back-to-back games in the Championship, you know, look at Featherstone. Featherstone went on a bit of a run, won a few games. Doncaster won a few games. All of a sudden, they're up and they're in the mix. So I don't think all is lost, even though those signings haven't quite materialised.
What are your thoughts on player recruitment for this season? So I'll just kick this off with saying, I think, look, the players at the start of the season that left, I think there needs to be a re-look at the strategy by the club. They was obviously brought in for a certain purpose and none of them have worked out. So I think straight away, that was obviously something that's gone wrong that I think the club are probably aware of, that they need to approach things differently for next season, alongside obviously the dual reg. I think obviously when we're relating in terms of players like Ryan Lannan, Martin Riley, Liam Kirk, them players leaving, obviously they're players we've brought into the club. Now, if we're happy to let them go early, or some of them are obviously Ryan Lannan, that's a different kettle of fish. But again, you've got to look at yourself in terms of the recruitment. Why are we from week to week scrapping round? I think that does need to be addressed. But at the same time, what I would say is, you know, the players at the club that we've got, you know, a lot of them, I think you related to earlier about the Swinton, like when you do break it down, some of them Swinton lads, you know, contributing to the squad quite well. And I think for me, it's a case, and it's easier to say than do, because obviously there's cost attached, but I think it's not necessarily the players we've got. I think we need more of. We're just a bit of quality dropped in, and unfortunately we're halfway through the season and you're starting to see it from a Jake Mason, for example. You know, Jordan Johnson coming back into the squad, we've seen it briefly. So I do think there is, you know, quality there, and we have the nucleus of a half-decent Championship team. I just think we just need one or two more, and the season has been far too disruptive to even think about achieving for playoffs. Look, we may scrape in there, but you're always putting yourself behind the eight ball when so many players have left already.
Yeah,
I mean, so many are coming in on loan, and so many have been recruited halfway through a season.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you mentioned, what are we on, five players have gone? Is that what you're saying? It's the official tally. But if you look at clearly Riley and Kirk, that's a situation that perhaps could have been avoided. But like, if you look at the lads who left earlier in the season, Sumner, I think, has stepped away from the game anyway. He went to Swinton, played a couple of games for them. He stepped away from the game. Adam Jones hasn't played. I think he went to Swinton as well. Cameron Brown played a bit for Whitehaven, but he's currently serving a big ban. He's out till end of August, I think, banned. So it's not as if you looked at the squad at the start of the year and you were like, oh, you know, maybe it was okay. But it's not as if even if them players had remained, whether they would have actually made a huge difference anyway. I think when they had the 25, 26-man squad, you did feel like it would be better than last year, and because actually at the turn of ahead of the 2025 season, it felt like Widnes' squad was bigger than it had been in previous seasons, but they've not quite got it right. And I think it is they're going to have to try and get into next season with 25-26, but 25-26 who they know are going to be able to play. But like we've said, and I've touched upon this before, it is hard for clubs to recruit, because if you know, if you're a hooker, for instance, and Widnes approach you, you're like, well, clearly Jordan Johnstone and Matty Fozard are going to be playing, so where am I going to play? And then if North Wales Crusaders are offering you a few quid, well, I'll just go and play for North Wales Crusaders because I know I'm going to play for them every week. And that's the tricky part that I don't think people necessarily appreciate, that players aren't daft. Do you know what I mean? That they aren't daft. They'll know when squads are signing player 24, 25, 26. And realistically, you're only going to pick up players of a certain quality that want to do that.
Yeah, that's the conundrum, isn't it? And I suppose the man who's probably in the best position to answer it is Alan Coleman, isn't it? Because he's obviously dealing with the players in the market day to day of what he'd obviously thinks is best and what he can juggle and obviously manage. But you are right, it is a massive factor in it.
Because that's the thing, you know, if you're signing a prop, if you've got, I mean, clearly, you know, clearly if you're a prop now and Widnes are speaking to you, you're thinking, well, bloody hell, I could get a bit of cash off Widnes here because they need a prop, they haven't got any. But if you're rocking up at Widnes and they've already got four props signed, you're then basically having to have a punt on, well, I think that someone's going to get injured, so I might get a run. And to be fair to the club, the stuff with the academy that they're preparing, that's the reason that's important. You know, Will Talik was a good example the other year. Not the greatest player in the world, but tried his hardest. But he was a prime example of a player that he knew his place in the squad, but when you needed him in the squad, he didn't let you down. Do you know what I mean? And it's like he probably wouldn't have got a gig anywhere else, or, you know, or he would have played. He might have played in League One for someone else, but he was a decent, honest, you know, honest player that when you were short on bodies, you could chuck him in rather than be scraping around for loan players from clubs who aren't bothered about playing for Widnes. Because that's the other thing as well. Every time he played for Widnes, it was because he wanted to play for Widnes. It wasn't because his parent club had said, oh, we need you to play somewhere this week and Widnes have got a spot, so can you just bob down there?
Here's one then for you, James, then. We've just announced a 19-man squad, but we've still got Brett Bailey out on loan.
Well, I mean, we don't know what the deal is with that. Is there well, it's funny we say there's a no recall. Some of the loans do, you can have a 1 month deal without a recall. So is it a case of that's what his deal with Hunslet is? You know, was it a case of he went to Hunslet and it was he's there for a month, but there's no recall because he'll come back at the end of the month? His month runs out this week, doesn't it? So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Again, it might be, like you say, if there was a possibility of recalling him, surely it would have been done because it's a no-brainer, isn't it, to have him back?
Yeah. Just a quick one as well, just relating back to one of the questions earlier about marketing. I've just missed out a point, actually, which I just need to quickly put in as well. So for the people who go the New Albion before the game, there is... obviously, I mentioned before about posters, advertisements and stuff like that with pubs around the town and bringing them into things. I believe there is negotiations and talks about away coaches being able to now park and sent to the New Albion. And in return, the New Albion are negotiating with the club, potential partnership, which will, you know, obviously mean funds for the club, and then obviously people who are going to New Albion as well before the game will get 10% off the drinks if they've got a season ticket as well. So that's something as well in the pipeline.
We need to get the New Albion sponsoring the podcast, Mike. There you go. You can work.
You know,
on
I'll
that.
Have a word when Annette's going. I'm a regular, so I'll have a word with him, eh? See what we can do. I think for our next question, I think our head coach will be pulling up his chair and listening carefully. So here goes. How long do you think Alan Coleman has left in his position? Very
narrow. I think I'm sure we had a discussion on this subject probably earlier in the season. My position on it hasn't changed an awful lot, to be honest. I feel like Alan's got enough credit in the bank because of how things were last season. Is Widnes's problem the coach? No, I don't think it is. Widnes have gone through a lot of coaches in the last however many years. This is the first season we've had. It's actually the first year we've had the same coach in consecutive seasons. I don't think there's an overnight fix to some of the problems that Widnes have. It's something that's got to be built over a period of time. And also, who's the alternative that people want to bring in? Because I'm not aware of, there's not many, Batley have just brought John Keir. I love John Keir, by the way. Great bloke. Bumped into him at Wakefield actually the other week. He was watching them. And I did ask him, is he coming back in? And he said no chance. So he's obviously had a change of heart. There's not a massive number of coaches sat available to work or wanting to come in to a club that hasn't got any money, is relying on dual reg, etc. players. You could take a punt on an unknown person or Halifax got Kyle Eastman. I assume that's something to do with his relationship with someone there. Swinton got Paul Wood as an example.
About Kyle Eastman, though. He really, in the reality of coaching, he's still an unknown, isn't he? We all know his coaching credentials. It's just a stab in the dark, and they're tailing off at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's what I mean. You could replace Alan Coleman now and bring in whoever, and in 6 months' time, be having the same people be saying, "Oh, the coach has had his time; he needs to go." And you're just like, "Well, wait, you're never going to get anywhere." The last time Widnes got rid of a decent, well, this is a bit harsh actually. When Widnes got rid of Dennis Betts, it fell apart. If Dennis Betts had stayed, the crumble wouldn't have been anywhere near as bad as it was because they got rid of him. And that's because the stability that he'd brought over a period of time, Widnes weren't very good in, well, probably not even in the Championship under Dennis Betts. They weren't particularly good. They certainly weren't very good in the first season of Super League. But then over the years, he managed to build a bit of an ethos together, and he brought players in and he added the right players. And he got somewhere in the end. Dennis Betts probably a poor example. There's probably better examples at other clubs. I think what Alan Coleman's obviously got to be able to do is he's got to be able next season be able to hang his hat on, right, I've brought in these one or two players who are going to help Widnes go up to go up to the next. Because look, the team he's got at the moment, there's a lot of good Widnes lads who he inherited, Jack Owens, Tom Gilmore, Jordan Johnston was there, Matty Fozzard, Joe Edge. There's a nucleus of decent Widnes players. He's obviously brought in players from Swinton. Dan Murray was an excellent signing. Mason and McWhirter they're ones that he can hang his hat on. If Mason and McWhirter become superstars, they're Alan Coleman signings. You know what I mean? I think that's what's gonna probably make or break Alan Coleman over the next few years is, can he bring in players to keep the squad ticking forward? But yeah, so a very long answer to that question, but I think it would be stupid for Widnes to consider the coaching position at the moment, because I just feel like there's so much that needs doing. Why would you rip up something that's there that actually has worked all right for you?
Look, I agree with what you've said, James. Just a couple of points to add to it, because I'd be only echoing what you've said. Last season was the first time we made the playoffs, since being in the Championship, and Alan achieved that. And look, to when we've dipped, and look, we haven't, and things haven't been ideal. So I don't want people listening to this to just think, you know, I'm blowing smoke up the club and I'm here to defend them, because I'm not. I'll just say how I think it is. But, you know, we achieved that last year, and this year isn't ideal. But every time you get to an unideal situation, you can't sack a coach. We've done it for year upon year upon year, and it's got us nowhere. And where we are with Alan now, look, I've been in the club this week and, you know, spoke to a couple of people in there, and I've actually seen, you know, what's going on behind the scenes. And let me tell you, Alan is doing more than just being a head coach. You know, he's putting everything into it, and you've got this youth development program that's on the horizon. And Alan is at the forefront of that in terms of wanting to build a club. And he's made no secret about it. You know, it's a long-term project. It was never going to be fine and dandy in 2 years. And I think, you know, we've got a guy who is massively passionate. Probably his passion maybe spills over a little bit at times, where, you know, we are in a position where, you know, we're not where we want to be in the league table. But like you say, James, sometimes people just watch the performances on the pitch and don't take in context or things that are going on behind the scenes. And I just think, for me, you've got to see where this season takes you. Like you say, I think judging Alan on recruitment, you're right in what you say. Get to the end of this season, see where we finish. Look, if it's a complete catastrophe, I might be sat here saying something different. And of
well,
course,
I mean, you've got
to take that into consideration. But I think for me, the real question comes in is at the end of the season, see where you're at. And like you say, a big recruitment drive in terms of things need to change in comparison of what we went into this season with. Of course they do. But I do think the club are aware of it. And if Alan's honest, I think he's already said on this podcast, he's got things wrong. You know, he's not got everything right. But I think I do think the club have got a good person in Alan who we do need to back and give him, you know, the best possible chance of succeeding. Because like we're saying, in terms of the coaching pool, gone are the days where you can go and get a Super League assistant coach. They're far too safe in the jobs that they're doing. So it's incredibly difficult if you're getting rid of Coleman, who you're going to bring in better.
I think don't get me wrong, if Widnes finish bottom four this season, serious questions have got to be asked. But even if they finish in the bottom four, would I sack the coach? I don't think that I would. I'd be like, you're in last chance saloon now. You know what I mean? If they finish bottom four, I'd be a bit like, that can't happen again. And if it did happen, that's the end of the road. But I don't think Widnes will finish bottom four. I know there's been a bit of people have been getting a bit hysterical about it. Widnes won't finish in the bottom four. You know, three of the bottom four. Well, I mean, John Keir going to Batley might ruffle a few feathers. I think the bottom three will be the bottom three it is now. Whether Sheffield will get enough points to get up to Widnes, who knows? It's all in Widnes' hands. Widnes play the four teams beneath them. Between now and the end of the season, three of them they play at home. So it's one of them things. You can't say, oh, bottom four's a certainty. It's like nothing's a certainty. You know, it's complete and utter nonsense. Judge it at the end of the year. But yeah, I think it shouldn't be something it's not something that I think needs to be discussed right now.
No. What happened to the fans forum and clarity ? Well, again, look, I can't say too much and stuff, but again, certain things are fed back to the club. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple of weeks or month, there could be potentially something along them lines. But like I say, we'll see with that one. So, yeah, I can't really say much more than that. But like I say, I've seen people's comments coming into the podcast through myself on social media and obviously on the Widnes forum. That was something that's cropped up, and obviously I fed back to the club. So, yeah, that's that with that one.
So what you're saying, Mike, is there's going to be a fans forum. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no,
I'm only winding you up.
But fans, it's something fans want. You know, yeah. I'm one of them people who'll walk up to somebody in a bridge suite and ask them a question. That's just me. That's my nature. But some other people in the world won't do that or don't go the bridge suite. And, you know, yeah, they'd rather write down the question on a piece of paper and send it into a stage.
You know what I actually think? I feel like the fans forum is a good thing, but I feel like they badged up wrong. Because I've been to a couple of them, you know, when they were on, and I always felt like there wasn't that many people there, and you get the same sort of people. No disrespect to them people. But I just wonder whether did the club tackle it wrong? Should it be like did they need to find a way of creating a hook and it includes a Q&A? Do you know what I mean? So it's like, right, we're going to do a kit launch is a bad idea. We're going to launch a kit and have a Q&A on the stage, or we've got two former players here, or we're having a quiz night, or we're having a race night, or we're having something.
Well, like something massive an event.
Yeah, something that makes it an event rather than at Monday at 6:30, you can come and ask the chairman questions if you want. You know what I mean? Because when you go, that's what it feels like, and it just feels a bit like, and I can see why people don't go, because there's nothing, whereas I feel like if you had another reason to go, like you were going to have a good night, or, you know, do you understand what I mean? I might be being a bit harsh, but that's, I feel like that's, don't get me wrong, I think you can have the fans forum things and you'll get people asking questions. But the point is, I think one of the issues is actually the club needs to find a way of engaging with people who are outside the ones that go all the time. And I feel like if you create it as a bit more of an event, where it's like there's going to be a quiz, you know, like the Vips nights as an example. I've only been to one or two of them, but the format of them deserved a bigger platform than it gets. Do you know what I mean?
I totally get that. Yeah.
You know, if them Vips events had been organised and promoted properly by the club, they would have had more people there. But that's just my opinion, anyway.
Are we happy with the offering of Elgrin, or are we looking to change kit suppliers? I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you whether we're going to change or not. For me personally, I think the way they're designed, in my opinion and my stance, I'm not. I either like the colours and patterns on a kit or I don't, and that's me every year. Like, so that's my stance on it. I can ask the club whether we're going to be with the same kit partners. But like, for example, this year, the black and red, I didn't like. So I bought the anniversary kit instead because I think we should be black and white. But that's my opinion. I think kits can split a fan base in 10 million different ways.
Yeah, I mean, I've said about merch size before. There's not really stuff that I want to buy there at the moment. I think the merchandise offering could be much better. I don't really see Elgrin pulling up many trees. I think there's other kit suppliers out there who would give you a lot more. But clearly it's a commercial thing, and whoever decides that at the club will decide who to go with, I guess.
And a last one, mate. Does the six-year plan still exist, and are we making progress on the IMG store? Look, again, don't have any access to how we're doing on the IMG score. All what I know is the club has are confident that score, which I thought was a bit embarrassing, to be honest, last time out, is there's going to be a marked improvement. As for the six-year plan, look, again, that's probably a question for Stuart Murphy, and, you know, we're going to try and get people on the podcast from the club in the next month or two. They can only speak about what they're putting together in the club. As far as I'm concerned, you know, I'm sure there is, but it doesn't mean to say it's all going to be a, a straight rise to the top. And obviously, year one, we made the playoffs, and right now we've dipped a bit, but I'm sure there is a plan, and I'm sure people from the club can hopefully go into a bit more detail when they come on the podcast.
I think the bigger issue really is the uncertainty around the game. So nobody knows what the makeup of Super League is going to be. Nobody knows what the makeup of Championship is. So I have every sympathy with Widnes and all clubs, really. Is how can you have a 5-year plan when you don't even know what the league's going to look like next year? Stuart was on the podcast, wasn't he, before Christmas after the IMG thing, where the 15 points on the IMG score is you get grade A Super League, and that's what everyone's sort of aiming towards. Widnes clearly are way off that based on last season's score, but their 5-year plan was to get to that 15 points. The problem is whether they're making progress or not. There's no guarantee that in 5 years that's what the entry mechanism is going to be, and that's the reality of the situation, I think, at the moment.
And that's the end of the Q&A for the questions I've noted down. But if, like I said at the start, before we went into it all, we've been going on for a while now, if there are any that have dropped on that obviously I've missed, we will include them next week.
Brill, well, thanks for that, Mike, and hope everyone enjoyed this episode of Widnes Rugby Chat. Please do like, share, comment, etc.
Wherever you listen. Are we throwing our predictions, quickly?
Oh, you want to do predictions, Mike? That's a good shout, actually. I tried to move past it because Mike got a full house last week and I only got 4, which means that Mike leads by 2 for the season. What are the fixtures, Mike? Let's have a look. There is a Saturday game, which, of course, is Widnes versus Toulouse. Hard to look past Toulouse, Mike.
It is, but I'm going to be... do you know what? I'm going to be cheeky because I've got a 2-point buffer. I'm going to stick my neck out and say there's going to be a miraculous bounce back by Widnes.
Right, okay, so we'll... Right, okay. Barrow Bradford.
Oh, well, Barrow turned up at Oddsall and beat Bradford, didn't they, earlier on? So this is the other way, but you've got to go for Bradford, haven't you? By the way, what a win that was at Barrow, considering Unslett was targeting him. I thought that might have been a 50-50, but it was couldn't be further from the truth.
Well, I mean, I predicted Unslett would win. So... well and truly got egg on my face after that. I think Barrow good. I think the Sheffield results throw me with Barrow because they lost at home to Sheffield, which you would probably 9 times out of 10, even when Sheffield are decent, you would probably back Barrow at home. And Sheffield's struggling this season, and Sheffield turned them over. So it's a bit of a that's thrown me with Barrow. But I think I'll go Bradford this week. Batley Sheffield. That's a real interesting one. Craig Lingard at his former club. And, of course, John Kerr's first game back against one of his former clubs.
And you know what? There'll be a lot of people listening to this podcast who laugh at John Kerr and will throw certain digs at him. But the one thing John Kerr can do is stabilise and galvanise a club and get back to basics. And if there's ever a club that's suited to, it's probably Batley, isn't it?
Yeah, I must admit, I think Batley will beat Sheffield, and that does Widnes a bit of a favour as well, because you know people were getting hysterical about Widnes being ninth. Well, they've still got a 4-point cushion over Sheffield. Well, if Batley beat them, there'll be 4 points out of both Batley and Sheffield. So I'm gonna go
for the new coach bounce on that one, James. I think it's a prime game for him to come in. So I'm gonna go Batley. Narrowly.
Halifax Oldham.
Oldham for me. I know there's been a bit of disruption with Grove and obviously the Toulouse trip as well. I thought that might have been a little bit closer than what it was with Oldham, but yeah, I've got to go with Oldham. There's some wobbling signs with Halifax now.
Yeah, I think Oldham Flat to deceive a little bit for me, but I think they'll beat Halifax. Hunslet against London Broncos. I think Hunslet won at London, didn't he, earlier in the season? I think.
Did they? No, I think London won that.
Oh, did London beat them? Oh,
Yeah.
I think London will win that as well today, this week.
London narrowly look that. Yeah. I think London have more quality in the team. It's just a very narrow squad, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, and then York versus Featherstone is the last one.
Crikey. York at home.
Yes, York at home, yeah.
I'm going a home win.
But yeah, it's hard to look past York.
That could go the other way. Put it this way, if they start for the first 20-25 minutes like they did against Widnes and Featherstone don't lose the players Widnes did, that could be a difficult afternoon. But, York tends to be strong at home, don't they, as well, especially. So I'll go for York.
It's an interesting one because, of course, Paul Cook was involved at York and he's now the head coach of Featherstone. So, you know, he'd probably have a little bit of inside knowledge there. But, right, well, that's your weekend. Widnes at home on Saturday night this week, 6 o'clock kickoff. I noticed that there's a wedding on, isn't there, I think, at the stadium?
Two weddings, I believe.
Two weddings, which says that the middle floor is inaccessible. So I don't know whether I'll be abseiling to the press box or what. I'm waiting to see what happens. But hopefully we'll see you there. If not, the Widnes are providing the live stream. Make sure you sign up to that. And yeah, thanks to Mike for his insight and his answers to your questions. And we'll be back next week. See you then.